give away to the ravages of time and gravity. And money? Well, the Beatles are right. Can't buy me love. And what about common interests and common, you know, personality traits? Well, contrary to what the dating websites would have you believe, those things are no guarantee of compatibility or commitment. In fact, I don't know if you saw this on the news a couple of years ago, the founder of OkCupid, one of the big dating websites, he admitted, quote, "We really don't know what we're doing." And he admitted that they were experimenting on their users, trying to figure out the best way to match people up. You know, and no, you can't take a questionnaire and then guarantee two people are going to fit. Because how many of us have noticed that some of the strongest, most long-lasting marriages are two very different people? But how many of us in our marriages are kind of polar opposites of our spouse? Yeah. That's just the way it happens. So having that common faith, or how about this one, children? For a lot of marriages, that's the foundation. But the thing about children are they grow up and they leave, and they leave just the two of you. And then what is your glue that holds you together? But what about marriages that don't have a common faith as a shared foundation? One of them is a believer, the other is not. One of them loves the Lord, is active in their church, strives to live out their faith in their daily lives, but the other does not. And the reality is that the person that you love and live with can be the hardest person to reach. And the reason is simple. They don't just see you at your best. They don't just see your Sunday morning smile. They've seen you at your worst. They know all of your secrets. They know all of your faults, all of your failings, all of your foibles. And so that can make it hard to reach that person. So how do you win your partner? How do you show the love of Christ to the love of your life? This is Peter's driving concern in the first seven verses of 1 Peter chapter 3. Everything that he says to wives and to husbands here is motivated by this question. How do I win my unbelieving spouse to Christ? And that becomes very obvious right here in verse 1. Wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands. And then he gives the reason here. So that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives. Now this was a huge issue for the people who first received Peter's letter and read these words. Because the good news of Jesus was spreading fast. It was spreading far and wide. And new people were coming to the faith all of the time. And naturally, a lot of these people were married. Now, husbands and wives, we make lots of decisions together. But the decision to follow Jesus isn't always one of them. And so you had people who were coming to Christ, but they were making that decision without their spouse. And some of you here this morning became a Christian years before or years after your spouse. And so you understand some of the challenges this presents. Now the scriptures are very clear that we as Christians are not to marry non-Christians. This is something that Paul calls being unequally yoked. And this is a word picture of a foolish farmer that puts two different kinds of animals under one yoke, like an ox and a donkey. And the problem with this is they're two different species of animal. They have different strengths. They have different dispositions. They will fight against each other. They will fight with each other. They'll pull in different directions. And you will not get your field plowed. Now, some of us ended up unequally yoked because, well, I'll just be honest, when we're young and dumb, we do young and dumb things. And we find ourselves in that situation. And a lot of times when we get married, our faith isn't as important to us as it may be later on. And when you got married, faith wasn't that important to you, but it is now. You believe.
You serve, you worship, but your husband or your wife does not.
And so there are numerous challenges. There's arguments about money. You don't want money going towards things that you see is unspiritual, is ungodly, and maybe they resent money going into the offering plate at church. There are arguments about time and how the time is spent. You don't approve of some of the places they go, some of the things they do, and maybe they resent some of the time that you spend, you know, volunteering at VBS, for example. And there's a host of other issues as well. You have different hopes, different expectations, different goals. Your definitions of what makes a good marriage are different. You have different approaches to parenting. Now, last week we looked at what Peter says to the wives. This week we want to consider the husbands. Now, this is something that applies to all of us who are husbands or who will be husbands someday. So, doesn't matter if you're single or divorced, this could still apply to you. And it applies to all of us, even if we have wives who are already believers. This isn't only for husbands who have non-Christian wives. Don't think that you get a pass on this. There's no exceptions. There's no exemptions. This is how all Christian men should treat their wives. Even more so for those who have unbelieving wives, because the goal is to win them over. But this is for all of us. And let me say this to the single guys here. Dating is the perfect place to practice this. Okay? If you don't do this when you're dating, it isn't going to just magically change when you get married. So practice this stuff now. But husbands should love their Christian wives as the daughter of God that she is. And husbands should love their wives who aren't believers yet as though she is already the wife that he prays she will one day become. But here's what Peter says, chapter 3, verse 7. And I'll go ahead and tell the guys upstairs, you can go ahead and bring the verse up. I forgot to give them a manuscript, so they're flying by the seat of their pants up there today. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives, and treat them with respect as the weaker partner, and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. It's only one verse, guys. But there are at least three very important things here that we as husbands need to understand if we want to be the husbands that God wants us to be. And I want to give you three C's this morning of how to be the kind of husband that your wife needs you to be. All right, number one. And guys, I made this real easy. Just one little blank in your outlines there. One word. Be considerate. Be considerate. What does that mean? Well, let me read this part of the verse from the English Standard Version. It's a little more word for word accurate. And here's what it says. Live with your wives in an understanding way. That's a big deal. Understanding means being sensitive to your wife's deepest emotional and physical needs. In other words, be thoughtful, be respectful, and love her in the way that she needs to be loved. Don't just love her in the way you think she ought to be loved. Be understanding and considerate of her needs, her hopes, her fears, her desires, so that you can give her the love she needs to thrive. You see, there is a trap that's real easy for us as men to fall into. And that is that we love our wives the way that we want to be loved. We love her with our love language instead of her love language. And we just assume that she will respond and react to things the same way we do. And so we think, well, I would be happy with that, so she should be too. That's not how it works. And I first recognized this at a young age. I was about sixth grade. I had gone shopping with my dad, and he was out shopping for a birthday present. My mom's birthday is in July, and we were getting ready to go on a big vacation to one of the 10,000 lakes in Minnesota, you know, where Dad loves to fish. And so my dad, being the hopeless romantic that he is, bought my mom a big tackle box filled with fishing tackle. Now, I'm just telling you now, my mom is not the fisherman in the family. It's my dad. My mom goes fishing just as Dad likes to go fishing, and she likes to love and support him. But if a meteoroid fell out of the sky and killed my dad today, I doubt my mom would ever go fishing again. And so even then, at a very young age, I'm like, Dad, don't you think we ought to get Mom something she likes? And he's like, yeah, that's a good idea. So Mom likes plants, and so Dad goes and buys her a giant cactus. I'm not sure about the metaphorical symbolism of buying the love of your life a prickly plant, but I will say that cactus was in their house for many, many years. But here's what I'm getting at, guys. Men and women are different. Now, that shouldn't be shocking news. But we live in a culture that's constantly lying to us, telling us that there's no real meaningful difference between men and women. In fact, we have towering intellectual giants like Miley Cyrus who say gender is irrelevant. But nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, this story was in the news, I think it was last year, where Google fired a software engineer. He was a part of a leadership team that was discussing issues of diversity in the workplace, and he sent out an internal memo. And it was very professionally worded and documented, but he got fired for suggesting that men and women are biologically and psychologically different and may have different needs in the workplace. All right? But that's Google. We're the church. We're going to tell the truth in here. And gender is so much more than a social construct or an insignificant biological distinction. Men and women are different literally down to every cell in our bodies. Take you back to some of your junior high biology classes here. Women have two X chromosomes. Men have an X and a Y chromosome, or as women know it to be, a broken X. You see, ladies, you've wondered what's wrong with your man. It's written in his genes. All right? There's no fixing it. He's just messed up all the way down. Every cell in his body. And it results in things like this. Back in 2011, the Lego company, they're the company that makes torture devices for adults, also known as toys for children. But they had found that 90% of their clients were boys. And they were thinking, if we could just sell Legos to girls, we would sell a lot more Legos. And so they began marketing to girls, and they failed miserably. So they did some more research, and they came to this earth-shattering discovery. A discovery that makes you wonder if any executive at Lego has kids. But here it was. Boys and girls play different. Really? But what they found out was that girls were more than happy to play with Legos, but they wanted Legos of different colors, and they wanted to build different things. You know, guys wanted to build, you know, trucks and spaceships, and girls wanted to build malls and houses and hospitals. And they wanted different characters. And they didn't just want female characters. It had to be more than that. You ask a boy about his Lego character, and he's going to tell you what weapons it has and what superpowers it has. All right? That's a boy. You ask a girl about her Lego character, and you are going to get a life story. Right? Because girls are relationally and emotionally different. And so Lego figured out, hey, we need to give our characters backstories. And so they came out with a line called, I wrote it down here, what was it? Lego Friends. with different colors, different characters, all of that. And it was very successful because they realized that men and women are different. Now, what does this have to do with your marriage? And what Peter says here? Well, simply this. Peter says, guys, that we need to live with our wives in an understanding way. That means that we need to be sensitive to the ways in which our wives are different from us. We need to understand how God has wired her. So, for instance, you know, we might want to show her we love her, and so we suggest, hey, we need a fun night out in the town. Let's get with some friends, some dinner, and music, and dancing. That'll be great fun. But she's thinking, I just want a quiet night at home with a good book. Or you're thinking, hey, we need a family outing. Let's grab all the kids and go do this activity. And she's thinking, can we get a babysitter and I can get away from the kids a few hours? You know, it might be the other way around. You see, guys, there are a lot of things that we do that we think are loving because we're loving them with our love language. But we're tone deaf to her emotional needs, and so we end up actually hurting the relationship, and all of a sudden there's stress and there's conflict and you're fighting with each other and you're not quite sure why. So husbands, ask your wives what they need. Ask them what they want. Learn how to tune in to her emotional wavelength. Learn their love language. All right? So if you're extroverted and she's introverted, you're going to have to make that translation. Or maybe it's the other way around. You know, she's really outgoing and you're not. And you're going to have to make that jump. And wives, here's where you can really help us. And here's where you can really help yourselves. You need to communicate this. You need to tell us what it is that you want and what it is that you need. And you need to communicate it clearly and you need to be specific. All right, because here's the trap ladies fall into. You like to beat around the bush. You like to drop little hints. And your thinking goes like this. Well, if he truly loved me, he would just know. We're men. We don't just know. Remember, we're broken. You can't fix us. You're just going to have to work with us. The bottom line is we are not wired emotionally and relationally like you. So just come right out and say, hey, I need you to do this. And then we as a guy can say, okay, I can do that. But don't expect that we got some magic decoder ring in a Cracker Jack's box sometime that tells us how to interpret wife signals. We figure some of that out, but we don't always figure all of it out. So number one, guys, be considerate. Live with your wife in an understanding way. How has God wired her differently? And love her according to that. Number two, and I'm going to use a really old sounding word here. And I use this word because I was looking for three C's, but also because it fits. Be chivalrous. Be chivalrous. Now, if you're looking in the text for that word chivalrous, you're not going to find it. But here's what Peter does say. Treat them with respect as the weaker partner. And it's the idea communicated by that traditional concept of chivalry. Treat her with honor. Treat her with respect. Treat her with care. By God's design, your wife is to be the special object of your love and care. And when Peter calls her the weaker partner, he's not being sexist. He's not being a chauvinist. He's not saying that she is weaker spiritually or emotionally, or intellectually, but rather he's talking about what we were talking about just a few minutes ago. Men and women are different. And he's saying that she is physically weaker than you. And men, on average, are 50% stronger than women. But it's not just that. It's more than that. Most of our advantage in strength, if you will, is upper body. Now, you get lower body, we're much closer to equal there. But even the type of strength we have, Terry, is different. Men have a much higher percentage of what are called type 2 fast twitch muscle fibers. Those of you that work out know what I'm talking about here. But it's these fast twitch muscle fibers that allow us as men to have that sudden burst of energy at a moment's notice. You know, we can, and we lift up something really heavy. You know, this is what allows us to open pickle jars. My wife tells me that the only reason she married me was so that I could open her jars. And if that's what it takes to stay married to that sexy girl, I'll keep opening jars. All right? But women have a much higher percentage of type 1 slow twitch muscle fibers. Right? This is what gives a woman her endurance, her ability to stick at something over a long period of time. This is what makes her like the Energizer Bunny, and she can just keep going and going and going. To say that women are the weaker partner doesn't mean that they are less important, that they have less worth in the eyes of God. We are both made in the image of God. Paul writes in the New Testament that in Christ there is neither male nor female, that we are all one in Christ Jesus. So we are equal in God's eyes. All right? But equal does not mean equivalent. We are not the same, and we don't do the same things the same ways. Men are, here it is, I'm going to say it out loud. Men are better at some things, and women are better at other things. And that's simply how God has made us. And God gave us different roles and different abilities to help us serve and provide for each other. And marriage becomes this beautiful symbiotic relationship. And a husband that understands and respects these differences will protect and will provide for his wife. This is the main idea behind chivalry. Our culture once understood the value of respecting and honoring women, and to a large degree that has been lost in our culture. Now, a boyfriend will pull up in the driveway, send her a text, and just expect her to come out. You know, no chivalry, no respect, no honor. You know, now, you know, husband and wife go out to dinner, and he's like through the doors of the restaurant, and she's still getting out of the car. You know? No chivalry. I know how it is, guys. We're hungry. We want that hunk of meat, you know? And so we're ready to go conquer. But that respect and honor. So let me just, some of this is just stuff that my dad taught me. And I'll pass it on to you, and some of it's just put into a modern scenario. Hold the door open for her. Wait for her. Walk with her. Offer your jacket if she's cold. Share your umbrella even if you get a little bit wet. Let her order first. Send her a text. Let her know when you're leaving. Let her know that you got there all right. Let her know when you will be back. And how do I say this? Let me just say it this way. I believe that God has given us incredible freedom within marriage. But guys, the texts and pictures that you share between the two of you, keep between the two of you, right? Don't be bragging to your buddies. Don't be showing the guys at work. Honor her privacy. Honor the purity of the marriage bed. Stand up for her. Praise her in front of your friends. Don't put her down. Remember special days and actually prepare for them. Nothing more funny than going into Walmart on February 14th. And watching the endless string of men buying flowers and cards, knowing they have put zero thought and planning into this special day. Guys, I'm not pointing the finger because I have been there, I have done that. So I'm saying to all of us, we can do better than that. And she deserves better than that. When you have something personal and relational to discuss, don't just text her. Call her, or better yet, have a face-to-face conversation. Be chivalrous. That's number two. Be considerate. Be chivalrous. Number three, be a companion. Peter says she is a partner. Now, he says weaker partner, and we tend to focus on that word weaker, but notice he calls her a partner. She's a partner with you. And then he goes on to say that she is an heir with you, a co-heir with you, a recipient of the life-giving grace of God just like you are. And husbands, you are to love your wives as Christ loved her. The way Paul puts it in Ephesians chapter 5 is this: husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And how did Jesus love the church? He died and gave himself up for her. He loved her with a sacrificial love. And that's how we are to love our wives. She may be a weaker partner, but in God's eyes, she is your partner. She is your co-heir. She has equally received His love and grace, and you need to view her as an equal, as a partner, as a companion, because you are fellow recipients of the grace of God. You are equal partners in marriage. Do you treat her as a partner? Partner with her in parenting. Partner with her in finances. Partner with her in your goals and dreams and ambitions. There's a frightening trend I've noticed in marriage in recent years, and that is the subdivision of everything into his and hers. And of course, you're going to have some different interests and things like that. But strive in your marriage to think in terms of ours. Not his and hers, yours and mine, but ours. And you'll each have your own interests. You like to fish, she likes to scrapbook. You like fantasy football, she likes to go antiquing, and that's okay. But remember, you are companions. She's not just your lover, she is your friend. She's not just the mother of your children, she is your partner. Share life with her. And lest we think that these are just practical suggestions, lest we think that this is just casual advice, according to Peter here, these things actually have a bearing on how God answers your prayers. Now, throughout this series, we've been talking about how we as Christians are a part of two worlds at once. We live in this world here, but we belong there. We're part of this world here, but our identity, our destiny is there. And your marriage with your wife is one place where these two worlds, here and there, meet face to face. How we love our wives directly affects our relationship with God. How we understand her, how we treat her, how we view her, either opens up our relationship with God or closes it down. It will either help our prayers or hinder our prayers. Guys, if we believe Peter here, then our closeness to God is directly tied to our closeness to our wives. So brokenness with her leads to brokenness with him. So guys, consider this passage as an invitation not only to be close to your wife, but as an invitation to be close to your God, your Creator, and your Savior. These two things are integrally tied together. Marriage is very much a spiritual issue. And guys, God has called us to do these three things. Be considerate of our wives. Be chivalrous. Be a companion. Treat her as a partner. Now, last week we ended the service by having husbands pray for their wives. I want to do the flip-flop of that here this morning. And I want to have wives pray for their husbands. And Rebecca, it's okay if you want to go up on stage and pray for him, because we all know that he needs it. So, yeah. So you can go up there and lay hands on him gently and pray for him. And ladies, I want you to pray for your husbands. Be thankful for them. Be thankful for all the ways they do these things, and pray that God also helps him to be the husband he's called to be. And then after you've had a couple of moments to pray for your husbands, I'm going to have my wife finish this out in prayer. So ladies, go ahead and take some time to pray for your husbands here.